Okay, so my name's Parimi and I'm here with
Padma Vuha,
Kamala Nandi.
We're in Adistana. It's a beautiful spring after, well, summer almost day. Sunshining, and we're up in the lovely sitting room lounge that we call the Beams. So we're in the middle of a retreat, so why don't you tell us about the retreat? I'm just a visitor.
Yeah, this is a pretty momentous occasion, actually. We were on the first ever weekend retreat for the gender-diverse Sangha within the Tri Ratna Buddhist community.
Great. The gender-diverse Sangha. So that's an expression that probably some people who are watching this will wonder what you mean by that. Although, in fact, it's pretty topical at the moment. You can hardly turn on, in the UK anyway, you can hardly turn on the radio at the moment without hearing some programme around gender diversity, gender fluidity, non-binary gender identity. But certainly some of the people who are watching and listening to this won't know. So would one of you like to give us a little brief definition of what that means?
Yeah, okay. Well, most people's experience, education of what people are like is very much, well, there are women and there are men and that's it. And, you know, for quite a lot of people that is the case, but there's a lot of people for whom it's a lot more complex or diverse or nuanced than that. People have an experience of themselves that doesn't slot neatly into being a woman or a man, or possibly doesn't slot into that at all. And within the Tri Ratna community, things have historically been very set up as very supportive for events and retreats and study for women and for men, separately, single sex things. But there are a growing number of people who are really keen to get involved with the Dharma, but who feel like in order to do that within Tri Ratna, they have to make themselves fit into something that just doesn't, where they can't actually be themselves out loud, or they don't feel understood or met.
I'd like to come back to talking about specifically gender diverse issues within Tri Ratna, but first of all, just a little bit more about the whole kind of general topic, if that's okay. As I was saying, at the moment, it's quite a topical theme. Radio 4's been, people in Radio 4, which is one of the UK stations, kind of discussion radio stations, there's been quite a few things. Do you think this is a new thing, or is it something that's been present but not actually talked about so easily?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people say, well, where did this all come from? And my answer is, just from the research I've done, is that it is nothing new. If we look at some indigenous communities, Native American Indian, Australian Aboriginal, there have been more than two genders. You know, in some Native American communities, there's five genders recognised. And there has been language within those communities for those people. And because that didn't meet with any conflict with their belief systems, it wasn't a problem. I think what we're seeing now is an emerging, you know, in the West and particularly in the UK, which is where we're based, is an emerging into a more of an openness, more of a breaking open, because I think people feel safer to do that. If you look at the rate of increase in terms of the amount of children accessing gender services within the UK, you know, it's gone 100%, 100% over the last couple of years. So I think people feeling safer and like it's more okay to talk about these
when
things.
You say gender services?
Within the UK, we have what are called gender identity clinics. They're run by the NHS. The NHS has been treating trans people for 30 years at least. 30 or more years. And so we have 7 clinics, I think, across the UK. And there's one specifically for under 18s in London as well.
So that's for the trans community. It's been quite a long time that trans issues have been more to the fore. But this seems to be something a bit different, the gender diverse, or do you see it as part of the whole, is it a spectrum, is it a a world, the same world, is it?
Yeah, well, as what we're trying to support as a group, in a way, is we see ourselves as meeting two separate but definitely overlapping needs of people, because there's definitely, there are people who are trans who, you know, still straightforwardly experience themselves as woman or man and need support in transitioning within the Buddhist community and that sort of stuff. And then there's the diversity beyond the gender binary, so people, what's become known as non-binary genders, non-binary experience, which still culturally, socially, outside of certain traditional cultures, is still a lot of people just don't even recognise the existence of that. So there's this kind of added layer of invisibility and lack of support and lack of legal recognition, mostly.
It's also, it's possible to be trans and non-binary. And it's possible to be non-binary and access support services, say, in the UK, because that's all I know about at the moment, to be able to access support from the medical establishment with that.
So even if one chooses not to change gender, not to do a kind of physical gender realignment, there is support for people who want to live in a way that isn't so firmly fixed in their birth gender, for example.
Yeah, so the support services aren't there just to say, okay, we know that you're asking for some physical changes so that your body, you know, looks more how you need it to look.
So the external and the internal are more...
That's right. You know, so they're also understanding that maybe not everybody wants the same package of treatment. So, for example, within the trans male community, you know, it's quite possible that somebody might ask for what's called top surgery, where so somebody who was assigned female at birth asks for top surgery, which is basically a double mastectomy, but they might choose not to go on the male hormone testosterone as well. You know, that's all they need to feel comfortable is to no longer have a bumpy chest. I mean,
nothing that makes them so obviously identifiable. So, coming into the retreat that we're talking about at the moment, so that's a retreat for both those overlapping, as you put it, kind of groups. So there are some people here who are trans, and there are some people who are identifying as gender non-binary.
And some people are both.
And some people are both, I mean, I'm trying to kind of get it so that people who are listening to this who are thinking what, who, where, what, why, you know, are just going to get a bit more of a sense of why we have in this retreat, why is it happening?
Well, some, you know, some people are here because they have questions about their experience of gender and they're trying to explore that with a group of people who are actually supportive of that, because... You know, for a lot of people, it's quite hard to find support in the wider world.
And what we do, which is so lovely, I think why it means a lot to me, is it's a meeting of two experiences, you know, that we're all really passionate about the Dharma. And we're having experiences about our gender that don't fit into societal norms. So we've got a lovely meeting place there. And we actually, what we're really focusing on this weekend is using our understanding of the Dharma, our practice, to really support ourselves with these experiences, because it's possible to feel quite isolated with them. But the Dharma has got so much to offer us. So in a way, that's what we're working on this weekend, you know.
So how many people have turned up for the retreat?
We've got 21.
Have 21.
Great.
Which is nice.
And this is the first time a retreat with this title for this particular... I'm kind of hesitant to call it group of people, because I can see, even just chatting to people here, that there's a massive diversity even within the 21 people who are attending the retreat. So, but it's the first time that a retreat of this nature has been held.
Yeah, well, it's the first
entry right now.
Yeah. It's the first residential retreat, because we had a day retreat at the end of last year
at the LBC
in London, the London Buddhist Centre. That was just for a few hours.
So how did people know to come on it? How did it occur? How did it happen? Is there a bush telegraph?
Well, we're very unique. You see, I think we're very cutting edge. We're incredibly modern because this retreat has come about because of a Facebook group. So 2.5 years ago.
It was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it can't be 2.5
It wasn't last year.
excuse us, well, we're just arguing.
Yeah, let's just argue about this. Well, you see, because last year was Bante's birthday. So it'd be the year before. So 1.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 1.5 years ago. That's how we sorted that out. 1.5 years ago, Padmavyuha and I were here at Adhisthana on a women's convention, women's order convention.
Oh, yeah.
And we met somebody called Sal, who was working with a cooking team from the LBC. And I immediately spotted that Sal looked like the kind of person that might have something in common with us. They appeared to have a gender identity that didn't fit into a binary norm. So we soon all got talking. I had felt quite concerned that I wanted to support Padmavyuha in what they were experiencing with their transition and becoming more integrated into the women's wing of the order at the time, and thinking that I'm sure it's not just us. You know, at the time, actually, I probably would have described myself as a cis ally. So cis meaning identify with the gender I was given at birth, ally just meaning, you know, somebody who's supporting. I had a fairly open idea of gender myself. My own personal history means I've got quite an open idea of what I think gender is. And we started talking, and we decided that there was probably enough people to start a Facebook group. And we now have, getting on for 250 or so.
Yeah, a bit over.
Yeah.
Including a few allies.
Yeah.
Over 250 people.
Yeah. And that's worldwide, which is what's been lovely about it. So you could have somebody on completely on their own over in, you know, over in a city in India or a city in Australia. But actually what's been really lovely is we've been able to create this online sangha and have real meaningful connection with one another, support each other, and very much, again, talking about our experience in the context of our practice, in the context of being in Tri Ratna. So it's become a very supportive space. So in a way, it's just very moving to have this weekend where we actually get to meet in person, because we've seen a lot of each other's photographs.
Yeah.
We've written a lot to each other, shared a lot of experiences, but to actually be physically with each other is very moving. It's very connecting.
So I was actually one of the people that was involved at the start of that Facebook group as an ally, and I remember when we launched it, I think within a week there were like 80 members or something. I remember kind of thinking, well, I'm sure there will be quite a few people interested in this, but it really never occurred to me that there would be, within a year and a half, there would be 250 people. That's quite I mean, that's quite something, isn't it? That it's just grown so kind of fast.
Well, and it's quite striking. I think we, when we first mooted the idea of launching it, we expected, oh, well, the demographic is probably likely to be younger people. But what it's, you know, I think about a fifth of the people are in the order, for example. And it's a very broad age range and gender range and experience range and everything.
So even here on the retreat, there seems to be quite a broad age range, and actually a little bit older than I would have expected as well. Because I think a lot of the reading that I've been doing around the topic tends to emphasise and focus a lot on the millennium generation, whereas I would guess that a lot, if not most of the people in this event, are probably not from the millennium generation. They'd probably be a bit older than that, I would guess. Gen X.
I think we've probably got mid-20s up to about 60s. Over 60s,
Which is great, isn't it, that there's such a kind of wide range.
Well, you see, this is the thing as well. I think that actually a lot, you know, it feels like for some people they've been waiting in the wings, you know, that although they've had a sense of something about themselves and now it's more out there, there's a chance for them to go, oh, no, this is me as well. I'm part of this, actually. That makes sense to me. Oh, I always felt I was different, or dot, 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 you know. So it's sort of creating a context for that.
So I've actually got a few questions that people ask me, which, you know, I can answer to some extent, but I'd quite like to ask you them, if I may. So one of the questions I'm asked a bit, quite a bit, is, as Buddhists, aren't you trying to get beyond identity? So why is there such a fuss about identity? So I have my own answer for that. Satisfies people, but I'd like to hear from you.
I'd be interested to hear more Buddhists trying to answer that question for themselves anyway, whether they regard themselves as gender diverse or not. I think people whose experience of gender is outside of what society considers to be, you know, normal and expected and conforms to all that sort of stuff, are necessarily way more conscious and aware of that experience of themselves and how it differs from what's expected of them, and therefore there's a lot more thinking and questioning and reflecting goes on. And I think for a lot of people, because of how society tends to respond to them, have quite a negative relationship with themselves. And in a way, I mean, it's been said, you know, before you can go beyond the self, you need to have a positive sense of self to step out of or step beyond. So for a lot of people, that's this stage of the game for us is kind of coming into ourselves before we do more stepping beyond.
Well, I think what Bante describes as the sort of happy, healthy human. You know, that's certainly my understanding of it. Yes, and I think from my own personal experience, I've had the last couple of years have been quite intense for me in terms of my own gender, is that yes, I feel like in a sense no stone's been left unturned. You know, it's been a time of deep introspection, deep questioning, and just experiencing that sort of insubstantiality of self. That actually, in a sense, it's been a bit of a gift for me. You know, to have that really challenged and questioned and thrown out and open into the air, and it's been quite scary. But I take that to be a positive experience for my spiritual practice.
Because it's shaken up your sense of self in all ways. I mean, I have a slightly parallel experience going back 30 years or so. Maybe 40 or more. Of kind of coming out as a gay woman, coming out as a lesbian. And and sometimes people saying to me, why do gay people always have to assert their identity all the time? And so, well, it's like, I remember being in a group actually where we were kind of checking in, not a tree rat in a group or even a Buddhist group, it was a psychotherapy context, and people saying, well, I'm so-and-so and I live with my husband and I've got 3 children and I'm somebody else and, you know, my wife does this and that. And then I said, you know, pardon me, and I'm a lesbian. And this woman said, why do gay people always have to tell you about their sexuality? And I was like, what's the difference between that and you telling me about your husband, your wife, etc., etc.? It's quite different. I thought, oh, okay. So in a way, I think there probably is a little bit of a parallel.
I think people just don't see the extent to which they are who they are, just because it's very, very normal within society.
And they're mirrored back a lot of the time in so many ways.
Yes, I think most, in my experience, the people who tend to ask that question about sexuality or about gender are unaware that they have a sexuality or a gender, you know, a lot of everyone's got quite a strong gender identity. It's just that if it's the norm, then they're not even seeing it.
It's transparent in a way. So you've mentioned sexuality and you've mentioned gender. We've all mentioned sexuality and gender. So are they the same thing? Are they different? What's the relationship between them?
Nope. They're different, but like everything is sort of connected up. So that you know, our gender is just our sense of what we are, whether it's something that's kind of a masculine or a feminine, male, female, man, woman, agender, genderqueer, any of the non-binary genders. And that's more to do with how we feel in ourselves and then how we present that. So our presentation of that can be quite different. You could have like a room full of people who all say they're non-binary and they'll all look very different, with very different ideas of how that is. And our sexuality literally is who we're attracted to, you know?
Good. Again, it's one of the questions that's sometimes asked, you know. And, okay, I'm going to ask you another question that I'm sometimes asked. So I will ask you to, because you're quite very involved in the creation of A Tree Rat and a Gender Diverse, the Facebook page, this retreat, I guess a safe space for people to explore their questions of gender. Are you trying to dismantle Tree Rat and us? Single sex activities?
No.
Could you just say that again in case they didn't
know? No dismantling. No.
I mean, I trained in the women's ordination process.
Yeah.
I got a lot from it. I can see a lot of people get an awful lot from it. Mm. And there is no sense in dismantling something that is supportive for so many people.
Mm.
But it's not supportive for as many people as it could be.
Mm.
So I think for me, my personal vision, my personal request for all of us, you know, is can we just broaden things out a bit, you know, so that we can include and help as many people practice the Dharma and deepen their practice as possible.
I think you probably both know that I did talk about this at the last meeting of the College of Public Preceptors. So the public preceptors are the people who are involved in creating training situations for people who want to enter into the order. They're not the only people involved in that, but they've got a very particular place in that. And I just wanted it, you know, to be clear to people that this is a growing, there's a growing number of people who might well feel uncomfortable in trying to train for ordination in either the women's wing or the men's wing. And actually there was an openness to that. There was quite a sort of strong sense of receptivity. And I believe you've talked to Bhante Sangharakshita about that, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and someone else since then. And he's... When I and Bhante talked about... This time last year, more or less, when he heard that we were planning to do this retreat, and I had to be meeting up with him, and he was very interested to find out more about gender diversity and non-binariness and... kind of how that does or doesn't relate to sexuality and asexuality and all that stuff. And he very quickly honed in on the fact that he said, oh, you know, well, it's a very logical progression that if we want to make the Dharma accessible to people who don't identify or feel comfortable with women as women or men and women's or men's processes, that we will need an ungendered ordination process for people. He just sort of went straight to that. And has definitely been talking about it with you and other people since then. It's very much in the air that it will be a valuable addition to what's already going on.
And I think it means, you know, well, I've seen it mean an awful lot to our gender diverse Sangha. To have that information shared has been so validating and affirming. I think, you know, if you're feeling maybe a little bit marginalised or people don't get you, but then you hear that the founder of your Buddhist movement said something like that, it's been just lovely to hear, because we have, you know, there have been people who've been wondering whether they can continue to practice here.
Yeah.
Tree Ratna's got so much to offer, you know, and I know that we can do this. We've got this, you know. It'll take time, and that's another thing Bhante said, is he said it's going to take patience and communication.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's not going to, you don't get change like that, and certainly not in Tree Ratna, because of the way we work, you know. That we take care and make sure that we move forward together.
Yeah, we're bringing people with us rather than
no
forging ahead and finding there's a big gap. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, when I spoke to Bhante, to Sangharakshita myself about it, I mentioned that some people in the Facebook group at one particular point had been saying, oh, I don't know that Tree Ratna would work for me because of the very strong emphasis on, particularly in terms of training for ordination, the very strong emphasis in doing that with women were women and men were men. So I said that to Bhante, and he sort of shook his head and said, well, that would be very, very sad if people felt that they couldn't find a home with us. It was quite strong, you know, he said it very strongly. And then he did say the same thing, of course it will take patience, and it will take personal communication, and that was something that he emphasised to me quite a lot. So that if somebody was coming along and felt they wanted to be ordained, and they didn't feel comfortable immediately to know where they would like to do their training, or perhaps feel they needed something a bit different, it would need a lot of getting to know that person, that person getting to know order members who could help them to find the proper kind of path forward for them. So I think you're right, I think it will take patience, and I really hope people, you know, don't feel, oh well, it's not for me and that I've got to go somewhere else for that. And to be honest, I'm not quite sure. With, you know, I think other
Buddhist traditions, the best option right now.
Yeah, well, I think other Buddhist traditions maybe don't have such a strong single sex sort of emphasis. So it might be that on the surface of it would be an easier kind of place to go for refuge and to deepen one's practice. But certainly some of the people I know who are on that group have not had very good experiences in some of the other Buddhist traditions. Yeah. I mean, a lot will depend from, who you bump into, I guess.
Yeah, and from what we've been hearing, that there aren't really many or any other Buddhist groups that are engaging with gender diversity in the non-binary sense at all. So we're kind of on the cutting edge of trying, you know, being a group that's trying to support and address that as a community.
Last June, I was in the USA for a teachers' meeting, Buddhist teachers' meeting. It was mainly North American teachers, but there were some European, including quite a few from Tri Ratna. And I was chatting to quite a few people about diversity, which was one of the themes. But I think when I said we had a gender diverse Facebook group, and it must have been just after you'd seen Bounty, so I was saying about the retreat happening, and people were really quite amazed, so sort of very impressed. So that's good. So here we are, coming. You're what, about halfway through the retreat?
Yep, Saturday afternoon.
How's it going?
I think it's just going swimmingly. Yeah. People seem to be making all sorts of connections. Yeah. I can see people having long, deep, meaningful conversations. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're blessed with beautiful weather as well.
Yeah.
A lot of connections are being made, and it's just lovely to see for people to be able to really have a chance to really go into something and really talk about things they care about. And we had these amazing talks this morning, which will be being broadcast as well at some point. Yeah. Jnana Mitra. And Sal both gave very powerful talks, moving, and that provoked a lot of discussion afterwards. Yeah.
But is it all a bit heavy and intense?
No.
it's a mixture. You know, it's just a delightful mixture of, you know, real life, of things that are difficult, things that are beautiful. And I think really what I love is, you know, you just see the Dharma weaving through that. You see how one's their everybody's practices are really supporting them, and that's what I'm really passionate about. That's our USP. You know, I know we're not marketing, but you know that's what we've really got here. That's so beautiful. This isn't just a support group.
Yeah,
it's not. This is about Dharma.
Yeah. So it's a context for people to explore the Dharma, and explore issues that might be causing them.
Yeah. Just to be with, not to be the odd one out. You know?
I've been having conversations with and overhearing conversations that people are having, and people are just incredibly happy to be each other.
Yeah.
It's for many of them, it's a real first to feel like they can be in a Sangha context where they can kind of fully be themselves out loud, and where they know that it's a given that people know.
Yeah.
And accept and acknowledge and listen and you know, it's a really big deal for people that we've done this and that they get the opportunity to make make new friends and talk about Dharma and talk about their relationship with Tri Ratna.
Well, I've heard a lot of laughter.
Oh yes.
Earlier, I was sitting outside this morning, and I don't know whether it was while the talks were happening or if it was group discussion or what, but there was gales of laughter kind of coming through, which sounded really good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's I was kind of joking about the intensity, but I think again, it's a question that maybe gets asked. You know, are you going to just be talking about that? Is that what it's all about? Kind of thing. And, you know, sounds like actually it's a very diverse retreat. There's lots
incredibly.
Yeah. Which is great. I'm very pleased that Adhisthana could host this. You know, it's a good place to be doing it.
And I think that's another thing, you know, everybody here knows how significant that is. To be right in the heart, you know, where Bante lives, where all the big meetings go on, you know, where you guys live. That's very significant, you know, and I think it feels very integrating and incredibly positive. And so I think that's quite affirming as well.
Great.
It's lovely. I'm very glad we can be here.
Yeah. We felt very welcomed.
Oh, good.
For which we're very grateful.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So we probably kind of draw. That's half an hour, which is quite a while for a short interview.
Yeah, if you're still watching, thank you.
Hello. Or if you're still listening, because this is going to be a podcast as well.
Yes, sure.
But just before we go, any last little messages that you'd like to give, both to anybody who's watching or listening who does identify themselves as gender diverse, non-binary, but also any messages to people who don't identify in that way and are maybe wondering what the fuss is about?
Like, well, to people who do identify as gender diverse, I'd like to say, come find us.
Yeah.
We're lovely.
How would they do that? If somebody's watching this and they're thinking, or listening to this and they're thinking, I'd really like to contact, you know, Padma View or Camel and Andy, I'd like to contact this group.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do that?
That's a good point, because I don't... Oh, yeah, no, well, we have a Facebook group, which you can search for on Facebook, and it's Tree Ratna Gender Diverse Buddhists.
Tree Ratna Gender Diverse Buddhists.
Yeah.
So if somebody finds that, can they send a request?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yes.
And we also have a presence, a small but growing presence on the BuddhistCentre.com, which is going to be sort of paralleled in with the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, then you know, the order is still small enough for somebody to be able to find the emails for either myself, Camel and Andy, and for Padma View.
Yeah. Just also to say about the Facebook group, the main Facebook group is open to gender diverse people and our allies, which we very much welcome people who, you know, who run centres and retreat centres and study and whatever, who want to know more so that they can support people better. But we also have a more private Facebook group that's just for gender diverse people. If people have concerns about confidentiality or being seen on Facebook, if you're in that group, nobody outside it will know you're in it.
Yeah.
So
that's good to know. And any message for anybody who's watching, listening, who doesn't identify themselves, who identifies themselves as cisgendered, and you know, is just kind of curious about what we're doing on the retreat, what's happening?
Let me think.
So we've already said we're not dismantling.
No,
we ran that in any way whatsoever. Anything else?
Well, something I've done a lot of talking to people about what it's like to come out to other people as whatever, whether it's sexuality or gender issues or something. And the biggest message that I'd like to give to people who are not, who find someone telling them that they are, is the best gift you can give to someone is the benefit of the doubt.
Mm.
In the first instance, if someone tells you about their experience as being gender diverse, if you can just acknowledge that their experience is real, that makes a huge difference, because for a lot of people, they can get the opposite of that, and it makes life very hard.
They get met with disbelief or something.
Yeah, disbelief, or it's just a phase, or it's just something you need to work with, or whatever. And if someone comes to you and tells you something very personal like this about themselves, you can bet they've done a lot of thinking about it to prepare themselves to do that.
Yeah.
It's not just a whim.
Mm. Mm. I know we have a couple of people in the order and in their community who have children who've transitioned or who are identifying more openly as kind of gender diverse, which
And I've found, you know, I'm very active with Buddhafield Village Retreat, which is a very family friendly, inclusive retreat, and you know, that's very much our experience there, that we have children and teens and adults who are all experiencing themselves to be gender diverse in different ways, as well as a lot of, you know, very cis-normative people as well.
Mm.
And I think that is a particularly supportive space, a very inclusive and integrating space as well.
Mm.
You know, and I think part of what we're doing is partly sort of normalising it. And I think, you know, the other thing I'm sort of noticing is, well, the other thing I think I'll say, actually, is if you want to support us, and a lot of people say they want to, and they come on the page and they want to learn more, is, you know, if you join the Facebook group, we'd really welcome any questions people have, not to feel embarrassed or self-conscious, saying, I don't understand this, or what does that word mean? But I think in our centres, you know, it's actually, we make a lot of assumptions. I've realised this about myself, that, you know, within a minute of seeing somebody, we've already made an assumption about who we think they are. The thing with gender diverse people is, you're probably wrong. So just know that you're doing that, you know, and it's okay to ask. It's okay to say, what are your pronouns, actually?
Because
somebody hearing me talk might just automatically think, that's a woman.
Yeah.
That's not how I identify. Yeah. I'm trans masculine and my pronouns are he and they. So, but you wouldn't know that unless you asked me.
So in a way what you're saying is just be open and ask, and even if you think it's a bit embarrassing to ask a question, it's better to get it out in the open to be clear with each other.
I absolutely love being asked my pronouns, because it means somebody's noticed that I might not use the one that they thought I was going to use. And I really appreciate that. I really do. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
And I imagine certainly the podcast will be on the Buddhist Centre online. And I'm sure it will find its way onto various Facebook pages.
Yes.
And likewise for the video.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Great.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Chandra Dasa, for having the Buddhist Centre online that we can use for these things.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much.